Everybody, welcome to the Friday Filibuster. Sans Mac, who's unfortunately his laptop, has decided to give up the ghost, but I'm sure we will see him next week with some shiny new hardware. So good luck, laptop shopping Mac. Dave Johnson here, joined by Eric Astersliger.
Hello.
And Daryl Loomis.
Howdy.
Who is regaling me of his brutal climate he's experiencing in Texas. What are you suffering in right now?
Chilly, 65. I'm not wearing shorts. I had to put on a shirt to go outside a little while ago.
Aren't you Jack Nicholson from The Shining?
I sure hope FEMA money is being rerouted to you.
Yes.
Well, it better be, because it's cold.
Oh, yeah. Man.
What is it in New Hampshire, Dave?
It's minus something. I walked.
Is it minus right now? Yeah.
I walked from South Station to my office today, and it was a 10-minute walk, and it sucked so bad. And I had my big jacket on. I really felt like I wanted to crawl into Tauntaun's bowels. It was bad. It was really, yeah, it sucked. Like the biting kind of, like your teeth are frozen type of cold, you know? So it's, yeah, it's cold, cold, cold. So you got, New York is, are you guys hit with an Arctic blast as well?
Yeah, I think it's like one or two right now.
Ah, nice.
So we're, you know, we're above zero, so I can't complain.
If you add the two together, I'm still warmer.
That's, well, you add our two together and we're in the negatives.
So. Well, yeah, it's still warmer.
So, all right. And that is Friday Filibuster weather. So let's move on to, something more interesting. Daryl, do you have anything more interesting besides rubbing our frozen noses in your balmy weather?
No, not a lot this week. It's a lot the same. I have two episodes left of Deadwood before I'm done. And I'm embroiled in the fourth season of Doctor Who, which I'm actually really sad now because I realize that this is the last season of David Tennant, who I've gotten used to now. So as I was saying a couple of weeks ago, it's kind of one of those things, you get used to these guys and then they go away, and so it's kind of odd. But no, not a whole lot, unless you want me to talk about my online training course that I've been taking, which I hope you don't.
Let's see. Well, you know what?
Is your online training course being picked up by Fox?
Hopefully, if I get the treatment done in time.
Okay.
And we have we just patched in a very special guest, Mike Staley, in between bites of veggie lasagna, has decided to join us. Michael.
Yes, as I'm thawing out this wonderful.
Yes, you just missed a captivating weather discussion.
Well, I won't belabor the fact, except that this California boy is ready to go back now.
See, what? Come on, you need to settle down, my friend.
Oh.
I know. Four seasons. Just remember, four
all right,
seasons.
Yep. All right,
at least you guys don't get 110-degree August.
That's true.
Yeah. Actually, Daryl was just regaling us of his doctor. He's been experiencing Doctor Who, which, Michael, I know you're a big fan of. So.
Yeah. And I know, how have you gotten into the Martha Jones season yet?
I am through the Martha Jones season. I liked her a lot, even though it took me a little while to get used to her. I liked her a lot. I just realized, having looked online, that I'm in the fourth season. And so in the final season of David Tennant, who I've finally gotten used to,
yes,
because technically I liked – and I think on the whole I like Christopher Eccleston better as the Doctor, just because I like his personality a little bit better. But I've gotten used to David Tennant, and now I've got like six episodes left of the season, and now I'm going to have to get used to a new guy. And so I'll do it, and I'll be perfectly fine with it. But – it's one of those things where you get used to Rose Tyler, she's gone, Martha Jones comes on, and she's gone, and so forth. So
this is the beautiful, unique thing about this series, is that regardless of the cast changes, you find new ways to love the people who are currently.
Yeah, and they do a good job. The show creators, the producers do a really good job with it, keeping it interesting, even the, you know, recycling the same, you know, a lot of the same villains from the 60s show, the 60s and 70s, yes, show, but still find a way to keep it relatively fresh without having to like amp up the effects. I mean, the Cybermen still look pretty crappy.
The interesting thing about the show is it gets grander in scope without getting bigger in budget.
Yeah.
So it becomes more epic, and yet I think by the end of Russell Davies' tenure, when you get to the final four David Tennant specials, you'll see that Russell Davies, as a showrunner and an executive producer, was kind of running out of steam.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then they got who do they get next to run the show?
Stephen Moffat,
that's right, yeah.
It's some of the great
heavy writer.
Yeah.
So if you're in season four, you've already seen the Blink episode, right?
Yes.
Because I remember hearing that was like the place to start was there. I watched the first, you know, I watched everything that you've watched, But that was certainly the first one that was, you know, made me sit up and take notice.
Yeah, the Blink episode was great, and notwithstanding the fact that it's basically a showcase for Carey Mulligan.
Who was not the Carey Mulligan that we know at that time.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but I, you know, I and I don't have a lot of I don't have a lot of experience with her overall, except that she's so lovable in Drive, and then to see her in this sort of showcase role where she's actually got dialogue and stuff, I was really happy to I was really happy to see that, and she did a great job sort of holding the show on her shoulders for at least that one episode.
I was going to ask if you've gotten to the library episodes yet.
Donna Noble has left the library.
And if you haven't, yeah, okay.
That
echo that we just had with Eric plays a big role in that episode in which he's talking about.
Wow.
It's fantastic. It must be fate.
I did it on purpose.
That's what I thought at first. And then I
don't believe I have gotten to those episodes yet from my, you know, from,
you would,
yeah, I,
you sure would know. You would
I
know
almost you. Certainly haven't. Certainly haven't. A fun show that remains, without being really hardcore science fiction, remains consistently enjoyable and at least relatively thought provoking most of the time.
And they just released the teaser today for the second part of Series 7, and I cannot be more excited about the direction they're taking the show. So, can't wait. March 30th is when the new episodes start.
Another 8 is what I read, is that right?
Yep, 8 more.
Uh-huh. All right, I have nothing to add to any of this conversation. So, Eric, why don't we move on, and why don't you regale us of what you've been consuming your time with?
Okay, well, something new. I watched the premiere episode of the new Fox series, The Following.
Yeah, so that is sitting on my DVR, and I await your reaction.
I think it's okay.
Is there potential to, because, you know, Kevin Bacon, cool, James Purefoy, big fan, you know, the idea sounds interesting. So all that working, you know?
The premise is pretty cool. Where they're, I guess the premise is interesting. The premise is also kind of ridiculous, but if you're going for that kind of show, it's fine. I think I'm in the great and unfortunate position right now of watching The Wire, you know, which means that every other TV show I'm watching right now just looks terrible by comparison. And you get something like this where, you know, the characters are pretty thin. They're kind of defined by just a few small characteristics and the setups, you know, entirely about the premise and not really about, you know, this kind of rich mythology. It kind of, you know, it seems like it's not as good. I will say that the show, that's not The Following's fault, that's mine, but as far as like a kind of a horror thriller thing, I think that they have some decent, you know, bloody effects, kind of pushing maybe what you can show on like Fox. A little, you know, maybe a few too many jump scares, but I think that, you know, now, did you know the premise?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Okay. So what they're doing with the actual Following, the Following that the title references, is something I've never seen before. It's a little, like I said, a little ridiculous. I'm not exactly sure how that makes sense, but it does seem like it will set up, you know, the week by week adventures that they can have, so,
Is it episodic or is it a single? Does it seem like it's a single plot?
It seems like it's maybe a little bit of both. It seems like it's a single plot, but because of what they're doing, I think they can mix it up week by week. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much. I don't want to like give away what happens in the first episode.
Well, but the premise allows for like a sustained arc. Like from what I can tell, just from reading about it, there's like one arc of, you know, FBI agent versus real bad guy, but the premise is it allows for like self-contained, like series of self-contained stories, right?
So in that respect, it reminds me of a lot of other shows I've seen Fox try. Like Alcatraz was kind of that.
X-Files obviously had that.
I don't know if this is going to last any longer than those other ones. It certainly has some of the pedigree. It's got Kevin Bacon. Whatever you think of Kevin Williamson, at least, you know, he's a guy who did Scream and some of those other movies. And I think he also worked on Vampire Diaries, so you got a connection there.
And Dawson's Creek.
Oh, yeah, there you go. And Dawson's Creek, so it's going to be great. But yeah, we'll see. I'll definitely tune in next week and see where they go. You know, I think maybe the Edgar Allan Poe stuff's, you know, a little on the nose and that kind of thing. But for what it's trying to be, I think it could be interesting. I don't expect it to last very long, but I'll watch it till it's canceled.
All right. Oof, that's a cynical take, but yeah, I don't know. It's hard to
Fox Network before.
Yeah, that's true. We all have been there. So, all right, Michael, long time no talk to. What's happening?
I know.
What's the haps?
Well, after not doing theater for a long time, and then having moved out here from California, I'm now in the midst of doing three shows at the same time.
I bet you didn't know New Hampshire was a hotbed of theatricality.
No, and not theater that actually pays too. So that's a bonus.
Wait, it is theater that pays?
Yes.
Excellent. Oh, that's
excellent.
Right.
Even better.
Yeah.
Exactly. Three shows. So I knew of two. What's your third? What's your third gig?
The third one hasn't started rehearsals yet, but it's okay. Going to be in the midst of these other two. So
now, are these with similar troops or same people? Or are these totally totally isolated productions that you're?
Two of them are the same. One of them is different.
Okay.
One of them? Did I see that you're doing Glenn Gregg and Ross?
Yeah, that's the third one.
Okay. So, who are you in that, if you don't mind my asking?
James Link, who's the client that... ...changes his mind.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Jonathan Pryce played it in the film.
Yes, a friend of mine just saw the Broadway revival with Al Pacino.
Nice.
As, it's been so long since I've seen it.
Ricky, the sleazy character he played
in
the film.
No, it's not Ricky Romano. It's the Jack Lemmon character from the film.
All right. Nice.
Which was mixed reaction because of Al Pacino's personality in that.
That's true.
In that role, but apparently overall a really solid production of it.
Okay, very cool. But yeah, I just started rehearsals for Romeo and Juliet tonight, and I'm also doing 1776, which you can't get two more different.
Yeah, right. So,
fair enough.
So yeah, but this.
Do you like it? Is the bug? Are you bit by the acting bug once more?
Oh my God, I've been on stage since I was 5 years old, so that bug has been there for a very long time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but I haven't had a chance to do it, you know, because I've been so busy with the business and writing and doing other things. So it's nice to get back to it.
Good.
It's been a while, but I did get to the theater for the first time in a long time, and finally saw Django Unchained.
All right, and I don't think we talked. I don't think we had a Django review come.
No. I think Max saw it. Didn't he?
Did Max see it?
Max saw it.
All right. I'm glad someone's paying attention to this stuff. So.
There will be
anything else going on in my life. I have to pay attention.
I'm really impressed. Tarantino continues to grow as a filmmaker. You know, for a guy who we thought was going to be stuck in the Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, you know, genre, and the way he makes films. I mean, Inglourious Basterds was a great step forward. Even though I had some problems with the inconsistency and the way the storytelling was laid out, but this one was a beautiful, cohesive piece that. Still had all of the earmarks of a Tarantino film, but did some really remarkable, thought-provoking things, and in a very unhinged way. It was a great experience.
Nice. All right.
Almost 3 hours, so be prepared if you're going to.
At least it's one movie instead of two, so
that's true.
That helps me out.
Yeah. I hear the Gollum scene is really good, though.
It's very surprising. Right?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it.
All right. Well, it sounds like you've been a busy bee. So that's very good. Very good. Look forward to. So now, are these shows dropping at the same time, or do you have some breathing room here?
No, they're staggered. I have a week between 1776 and Romeo and Juliet, and then I have 3 weeks between Romeo and Juliet and Glengarry Glen Ross. So.
How long are the engagements? Are they just about a week apiece?
Decreasing amounts. 1776 runs for a month. Romeo and Juliet, I think, only runs for 2 weeks, and then Glengarry Glen Ross runs for 2 weeks as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fun. Very fun. Yeah.
All right. I see. I guess to me, I got an exclusive review for a new movie that hit the theaters, and that was The Last Stand, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. Mac and I caught that last week. Obviously, it did not do terribly well in the box office, if you recall. But, yeah, I mean, I left, I was like, I guess that was kind of an entertaining B-movie. But the more I thought about it, the more I really didn't like it much at all. Just tonally, it just didn't work. It was this weird blend of really brutal, hard R violence. Like, really, really brutal violence. Mixed with slapstick Johnny Knoxville humor.
Oh, jeez.
Nice.
Just a really odd, like, just really odd mix.
So it's Twins Meet, it's Red Heat?
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
Wow.
Just kind of weird to wrap your head around. So, like, I don't know. So it was just difficult to find out what you're latching on. I mean, the premise is kind of cool. It's kind of that, yeah, it's his last stand. You know, this all hell is breaking loose in this small town, and this cocaine gangster is running through, and he's got these armed mercenaries coming, and you know, our heroes have to stand fast against them. But I don't know. It's just all kind of like all the violence and the tension is diluted by Johnny Knoxville grinning like an idiot, feeding a World War II Gatling gun while Schwarzenegger opens fire from behind a school bus. So that's the kind of weirdness we're talking about. So
I would go see Schwarzenegger again if he was going to do Predator 3 or something like that. But yeah. It's been so long since he's done. I mean, obviously the Governor time, he's not doing any movies. But for 5 or 6 years before that, I mean, End of Days and everything up from End of Days is just awful.
And I'm not even going to pin it on him. I mean, look, he's definitely old, and he looks like a guy wearing an Arnold Schwarzenegger suit now these days. Uh-huh. That's kind of how he looks. But I'm not going to pin it on him. I mean, he was okay. He had some one-liners. It was fine. It was just the whole feel of the movie was just off and weird.
I mean, Johnny Knoxville has to be just some just dreadful casting.
It was rough. It just, like, it just didn't make sense, and like the humor and like the goofy slapstick they have him do is just doesn't make sense. So I don't know, just kind of a weird combination of like I'm not even sure what the answer to the question. Like I don't know how you answer that. Like, do you make it more straight, kind of a straight laced action movie? Maybe. Do you make it more slapsticky? I guess, but you have to lose. I mean, we're talking grisly violence here, so. I don't know. So just an odd movie going experience, and frankly, I'm not shocked that it kind of tanked. So.
Well, and the unique thing is, within the next 3 weeks, we have a new Stallone movie opening, and then the next Die Hard. So you got Stallone and Schwarzenegger all at the same time. And
in 1991, thank goodness.
Yeah, right.
I mean, there really is a dearth of like young action heroes. It seems like they're trying to push Dwayne Johnson, I think, and I guess what's his face?
Statham.
Magic Mike. Oh, Statham. Yeah, he's been. Yeah, he's always been.
And I like Statham.
But he's never had that. I mean, he's put some tons of movies. Like, I really like Safe, but he doesn't seem to really. I mean, there's no iconic. Like, Channing Tatum, they're pushing now, I think.
Oh, God, yeah. I'd watch
Hemsworth,
Statham.
Maybe.
I mean, maybe, but if it's really hard R, but he's more wooden than Stallone or Schwarzenegger by any, you know, by any means.
Right.
Are they even making those kind of action movies anymore? I mean, you got, like, The Raid was kind of like the big action movie from last year, wasn't it?
Right. I mean, look, this movie was legit hard R action, for sure. I mean, this Die Hard movie's rated R, you know, so we'll see what that shows. I mean, it's not, I mean, you're not getting, like, your Red Heat or whatever, you know, or your Red Scorpion.
Although Red Heat did have James Belushi, so.
Yeah.
I'm not, I guess I can't really vouch for the comedy stylings of that movie.
Was The Expendables 2 rated R? I've yet to get around to watching it.
I believe so, but I haven't seen it yet, so.
See, and like, to me, that's a brazen attempt to kind of capture that, but it's just like, kind of.
But it's like an all-star review of action movies. Yeah. That's no fun.
Yeah, that's accurate. That's accurate.
And so the way, I mean, I'll watch it eventually, but in The Expendables was fun for what it was, but ultimately it's a best of, and the best of Jean-Claude Van Damme isn't that great.
Yeah.
Well, you're just going to have to wait for other filmmakers to come up through the ranks to revitalize the genre.
That's true. I mean, I will say that, you know, the direct video market has some stuff. Most of it's overseas stuff. Yeah. But of course, now that all that is all either straight Chinese period pieces, you know, like,
which are really mixed.
Really mixed, and I'm borderline just, I can't take it anymore, to be honest. You know, I don't, a 3-hour epic on history that I don't really care about is tough.
It's totally incoherent on the face of it.
Yeah, and then, or it's like really goofy stuff, like, and here's my segue, Tai Chi Zero. And this is this crazy, this crazy comic book stylized martial arts film about a kid who's born with a growth on his forehead that when it gets punched, his eyes turn white and he gains Tai Chi powers. So,
wow.
So that sounds
cool. Awesome.
Yeah. Fortunately, it's part of the franchise because it ends on a cliffhanger. So it's like, what? Ooh. Don't do this to me because I don't really want to seek out Tai Chi 1.
And you know, like, you will.
But anyway, that's my segue to stuff we're working on for next week. So, Daryl, I'll kick it over to you.
Not a lot, although I'm going to mention something I'm working on this week and then mention something I worked on last week. This week I'm doing a new, speaking of Chinese movies, a new Chinese version of Dangerous Liaisons. Probably my favorite, not my favorite book by any stretch of the imagination, but probably my favorite story adaptation for film. And I every one that I've seen, I think I've seen, including this one, five different versions of the film, or five different versions of the book on film. And I love them all just because it's rich, the rich eating the rich and being awful to each other. And, I'm about halfway through the movie. I had to stop for this, smorgasbord of talk. But it has me laughing almost every minute of the film. It's a lavish production, takes place in 1930s Shanghai, gorgeously filmed. Haven't gotten to the end to see, you know, to see how they pan it out. What I've seen so far, fantastic, fantastic. And then, last week I did a movie that I actually realized that you, Dave, reviewed, a few years ago called Lightning Bug.
What's her face from that 70s show?
Yeah, Laura Prepon. Yeah. Which I had never heard of the movie, and it's a relatively autobiographical account of the growing up of I don't remember his name off the top of my head, although I could look it up. But the special effects artist behind Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel and a number of other high end television shows, effects heavy television shows, it's all it's Alabama. Awful villains that he grew up around. But I thought when I saw it that it was going to be a horror movie because, you know, you get the, you get his name and a bunch of sort of monster pictures on the cover. But it turns out to be a really balanced, really steady, really nice drama that surprised the hell out of me and would recommend it to almost anybody.
I have no idea what I hope I rated it okay.
You liked it.
Oh, good. All right. Excellent.
You liked it.
Thanks.
You liked it. All right. I pretty much left the the Blu-ray, so I pretty much left all of the story stuff to you because you were pretty much right as far as I'm concerned, and focused on the Blu-ray stuff. Nice. But yeah,
give it a 90. Look at me. Look at me giving that. Give it a 90.
Yeah. Ultraman. It ain't.
It is not. Yeah. Robert Hall is the name of the
Robert Hall,
makeup guy. Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Really an excellent movie. An excellent movie.
Do you have a memory of it? Except that Laura Prepon was in it, but that's about it. So
it was, well, it was, what, you reviewed it in like 2006 or something.
2004, my friend.
2004. So.
Wow. No. Wait, no, it came out in 2004, 2005. I reviewed it.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Oh. All right. Look at that. Look at that synergy.
Very much worth watching.
Nice. All right, Eric.
This week I'm reviewing the third season of Downton Abbey, which is the one that's airing right now on PBS. It's a weird release schedule because obviously it came out in the UK forever ago. Well, not forever ago, a few months ago. And now it's airing on US television, but of course it's done. So they put it out kind of midway through the season. So if you want to be ahead of your friends, you can be by a few weeks. My wife and I watched the first couple seasons kind of right around the time the second season came out, and we enjoyed it. You know, it's a very classy soap opera for people who like PBS, very much, about the, you know, this kind of particular period of English aristocracy just before it kind of all, starts to come apart, and, there's kind of the upstairs, downstairs element and all that stuff. But the first couple seasons both tied into kind of big kind of historical events. The first season kicks off with the Titanic sinking, and the second season's about World War I. This third season doesn't really have that so far. We've watched about three quarters of the season so far.
Well, besides the alien invasion, right?
Well, yeah, obviously, but that's, you know.
Spoiler warning.
We're still waiting on confirmation from that from our government. So I'm not going to count that as a historical event yet.
That's
more, you know, kind of a...
One of these days, Eric. One of these days.
Our fan website, our Tumblr,
will be vindicated. Yes.
this third season's okay. I like it. Alright. I feel like it's a little bit of a diminishing return on the past couple. Just because there are places where it seems like they're just trying to kind of jam in twists, just to kind of keep, I don't know, keep things interesting, quote unquote. Some of them had to do with a particular kind of the relationship between Matthew and Mary, and which kind of got wrapped up in season two, and now they keep trying to like jam in ways to make them argue and stuff. And there, because there isn't a historical, you know, context, it is set in a time period when the societal norms are starting to change and the roles of women, and it's starting to, you know, so people are butting heads. But other than that, they're just kind of cramming in kind of every single kind of life event and ceremony that you might have. It almost seems like there's a checklist of like weddings and christenings and all these things they have to like get on there. But I think if you like Downton Abbey, you'll still enjoy it. And you're probably watching it right now instead of listening to me. So, you know.
Yeah. My only experience with that is the community joke of Cougarton Abbey.
Yes, yes.
Which I love, but I have no experience with Downton Abbey. But that is a good parody, even not having seen the show.
Yeah, I mean, and that Cougarton Abbey has nothing to do with the time period of Downton Abbey at all.
Of course not.
All right. Now, Michael, have you squeezed any time to review or partake?
Well, in anticipation of our Golden Gavels, which is continually delayed just because of my schedule, it's giving me an opportunity to go back and do and reviews of things that we did not receive product for.
Hey, you could call them the Olden Gavels.
This is, yes. Well, as long as I feel we're ahead of the Oscars, then we're all right.
I think that's good. Well played.
Yeah.
Maybe the Olden Gavels could be all our favorite movies featuring, like, you know, older folks, like Ted White, Champion Friends.
That's Marigold Hotel.
All right. Sorry to derail your thought. Continue.
No. So I finally wrote up a review of The Avengers on Blu-ray, so that'll be nice. Up and running. I went out and bought Prometheus and Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, which were two films that I saw in the theater that Fox did not see fit to send us. So I'm going to write up reviews of those as well. So just filling some holes.
Nice.
Yep.
Doing work.
Yep, exactly.
Let's see. How about a little something called Dead Sushi? Anyone interested in hearing about Dead Sushi?
I've heard of it.
You have heard of it? Yes.
Yeah. Maybe it was on the product list, but I've heard of it.
So this is a Japanese horror comedy that came my way about a researcher who stumbled upon a breakthrough in getting enzymes to react with dead seafood, and he got drummed out of his, and he got alienated by a pharmaceutical company, and he seeks revenge on them by finding all these people at this inn and throwing his serum or his enzymes all over sushi, which come to life and start killing people in increasingly bizarre ways. And eventually the researcher turns into a giant tuna fish. And
like not a cut of giant, like
yeah,
a
big
giant
tuna
cut
head. Yeah, quote unquote, "I am reborn as tuna." That's a direct quote.
Oh my God.
And he's also horny too, because he fights like the lead female protagonist, and he's having these monologues of, "I need like another quote, like I have to grab your butt or something like that during the fight."
And that's rad.
It's hard to wrap my head around. I'm working on the review now.
Let me point out that Dave did actually request this.
I did. Oh yeah. I'm not lamenting it.
Yeah, I always wonder what the ratio of stuff he requests to not request does, but
what do you think? What do you think?
I tend to think it's 70-30 request.
That's probably I would say what do you think?
I would probably go with 60-40.
Yeah, so if I get five a week with three requests, two surprises, I suppose.
Yeah.
Two snakes in the mailboxes, so to speak. But no, Dead Sushi was something I requested because it did look, but it is fun. It's like goofy, moronic fun. It's super bloody, but it's like all CGI blood, and it's just really over the top stuff. So it's just, yeah, very tongue in cheek, very slapstick. Like very much alongside the Zobador. Well, you know, that was another one. One of my more, the karate robot, yeah, the brother who died from male nursing. So this is really more, you know, really crazy, eyeball shattering stuff. But I did ask for it, and I did enjoy my time with it. So,
right.
Thank you, Dead Sushi, and thank you, DVD Verdict, for making my dreams come true. Okay, let's go to our upcoming releases. That's dvverdict.com/upcoming-releases, or you click the DVD releases tab.
Yep.
And where are we?
January 29th.
Wow, January 29th. Okay. What do we got here? So, yeah, follow along and buy some stuff.
Biggest release of the week is probably Hotel Transylvania, which I took my nieces and nephews to see in the theater, and hands down, it is Adam Sandler's best film in 10, 15 years.
Really? Yeah.
He plays Dracula, and of course, all of his cohorts are in there. Andy Samberg's in there. Cedric the Entertainer is in there.
Now, are you grading on a curve, or is it genuinely...
No, it is genuinely funny, and will, mark my words, become a Halloween staple.
So, wow. Well,
yeah. Good.
Glad to hear that.
Yep.
Adam Sandler has not done anything I've wanted to see in a long time.
Yeah, and you won't even think of it as being Adam Sandler. So
sure. Well, that helps.
Yeah.
Well, there's a release my wife will be happy to see, The Young Riders. When that first season came out years ago, this is one of her favorite shows. So
oh,
she was
really?
Psyched when I got the first season. Now looks like here's the third season. I wonder if the license got picked up by another label or something.
Sure, like Mill Creek or somebody like that.
Oh, this is TGG Direct. I don't know what that is.
I don't know either.
Sounds like someplace I would mail in box tops to. To get balloons back in the mail from.
Let's see. We've got the complete series of failed show Pan Am.
Oh, yeah.
Christina Ricci, which I never saw, but just looked like a terrible attempt to capture some of the Mad Men magic.
Well, that they did Playboy Club at the same time.
Yeah. And then right after that, we got the pointless Paranormal Activity 4.
Mm.
Totally pointless.
Well, they're taking up the Saw mantle, and they're going to release a Paranormal Activity film every Halloween. So
fantastic.
You know, if you got the vision of that, go right ahead, I guess. But
and two from the left of Pan Am get my vote for most boring sounding DVD of 2013 so far. Norway. My Hugin Open Air Museum and Norwegian Folk Museum, Oslo.
I think it's the most direct title, anyway.
It is pretty literal. So
yeah. You've also got the Downton Abbey's on there, you know.
That's right.
Right next to Die Hard, as it should be.
One of these days, Krav Maga. We'll get Krav Maga sent to us, Michael.
Yeah, I don't know. Those guys
real life situations.
Yeah. One of these days.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say we on that same level we have Advanced Techniques of Caparaia.
Yeah, and two up, you see grappling preparing for competition, volume one.
Jeez. So if we need to defend ourselves, this is our week.
Can we get our DVDs at the attackers, apparently.
Now, Eric, you were a fan of Misfits, right? That played on BBC.
Yeah, I was. I tried to watch the last season, it's on Hulu now. Couldn't quite make through. I want to finish it up at some point. It was another one of those shows, along with Being Human, I talked about a few weeks ago, where they basically changed over the entire cast by the time they got to the fourth season.
Okay. Yeah, this is season two they're finally releasing on.
Yeah, yeah. One and two, totally solid, for sure.
Okay. Did any of you guys see Seven Psychopaths?
Big cast. No.
Christopher Walken, Colin Farrell, Sam Rockwell, Woody Harrelson.
That's right. Actually, no, I know a couple people who saw that who said it was good fun.
Okay.
But I did not see it for myself. It looked a little bit too much like what I don't like about Quentin Tarantino. But that's just from the trailers, so what do I know?
Kind of slipped in and out of the theaters very quickly.
Yeah.
But we're kind of in that mode right now where the studios are waiting for awards season to be over and they're not releasing a whole bunch of really high-profile stuff. You know, you got a Bruce Willis, Henry Cavill film. Sigourney Weaver, Cold Light of Day. Willis has been doing a lot of direct-to-DVD stuff lately.
Yeah, that's the one with Henry Cavill. Yeah, the Henry Cavill one. That's a tanked pretty hard, so.
Yeah.
All right. I guess we'll move along. Inadvertently sleazy sounding DVD release of the week. Daryl.
It's not a good week for
not
this
a good
stuff.
Week, yeah.
But we'll find something. I've got the brain for it.
I found six of them, so you guys...
Okay, fair enough.
Someone's vegetable lasagna is getting his libido work.
I can go for the easy one. There's one easy one that I see.
Yes, there is.
But it's already been mentioned, and so I'm probably going
Oh, really? Oh, I see a different...
All right, well, I'm going to go with Big Boys Gone Bananas.
That's good.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's good. All right, Michael, what do you got?
Let's do Woodhouse Playhouse.
Not bad.
Okay.
Eric?
I'll go with Cast a Long Shadow.
That's very good.
I didn't have that on my list.
That's very good. I guess I'll go with the dramatic one night stand epic, The Long Walk Home.
Well, you could have gone with Young Riders.
Young Riders was one that had already been mentioned in the thing. So,
or The Best of Raw.
Yeah, that's Best of Raw.
WWE. But the other one was, for people who enjoy oral sex, Cherry Tree Lane.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And we know that makes up a huge part of our listening.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure. Those people who love PBS, it's the same group.
Yeah, and for everyone else, it's Norway, if you know what I mean. Oslo. All right, sorry, I didn't mean to take it so blue.
No, I'm glad you did. All right, well, we are at the ambush topic segment of our program, so let's get right to it. You know how this works. Eric, why don't you kick us off?
All right, how did I phrase this? Important names. So I have a moment in a TV show or movie where a name is important.
My name is Inigo Montoya. You kill my father, prepare to die.
Oh, that's good. Is that what you're thinking? Is that what we're thinking then?
Yeah. However you want to interpret it. Good. That was actually on my list. So
I'm going to go with, I still don't know what the actual name is, but the naming of the princess from Neverending Story, when Bastion shouts out.
What is her name?
Yeah, it's.
What is it? Do we got it?
Yeah, it's Moonchild.
Moonchild.
He shouts out Atreyu. He just shouts a lot.
He shouts out a lot, but obviously they had to find another name for the whatever her. Yeah. Well, she wasn't a princess. What was she? The Empress?
That was the name of his mom. That was his mom's name.
Moonchild. Yeah.
Apparently. I'm not having trouble believing Dabney. Dabney Coleman plays father right in that movie? Or am I thinking of Cloak and Dagger?
Him or Tim Conway, who knows?
Someone, whoever it was, I had a tough time believing that he would marry someone named Moonchild.
Well,
I could be wrong. I don't know. They had a hippie kid, so it's probably true.
Jeez.
Maybe it was Charles Nelson. that makes sense to me. Did he scream, Brett Somers?
Oh, my gosh.
His king, a troll in Central Park.
I'm going with actually, I believe the second time in 2 weeks I've gone with The Simpsons, but I'm going with when Homer changes his name to Max Power, because it genuinely changes his life. At least for a little while. He gets to meet Ed Bailey Jr. and his car that runs on his own sense of self-satisfaction, and all sorts of great things happen to him when he becomes Max Power. It's also the only name he could spell right.
All right, well, both of mine were taken during the course of this, so I didn't think this out very well. I was inspired by Neverending Story, but that was probably a little too obvious. I'm going to go back to Princess Bride. Only I'm going to have the moment when Buttercup realizes that the Dread Pirate Roberts is actually Wesley. Because his name is important. Wesley. You took mine. I don't know. That's what I had.
So. Okay.
Well,
all right.
The other one that popped into my head was Khan.
That's good.
Very good, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take that one, too.
All right.
See, and there was the season finale of Angel, season 4. Remember, what's her face? Gina Torres plays the diabolical goddess, and if you say her name, she gets killed or her powers leave her. So Angel has to go behead some dude in another dimension, and he shows up, and the beheaded dude says the name.
These people who are in pre-Joss Whedon, or I should say pre-Firefly Joss Whedon.
Or post-cancellation.
Yeah, right.
Firefly, yeah.
Right.
Yep. Okay, so I'll go next. Castles.
Oh, boy.
And Mac will be sad because he won't actually be able to talk about
that. Yeah, Nathan Fillion.
Sorry. Yep. But now these are the edifices, the castles that are buildings and edifices.
I'm going to go with a Xanadu from Citizen Kane. Cost no man can say. No one can say.
Not bad.
I mean, on a horror level, there's a ton you can use.
That's true.
So I'm just going to go with a big, generic, obscure topic of every movie, essentially, that French director Jean Rollin ever made. He was a vampire filmmaker, mostly lesbian vampire films. I think I've mentioned him before, but he had the sort of Hammer he had the ability, like the Hammer Studios had, of finding absurdly gothic French castles to shoot essentially for free in, giving his ultra-cheap, sometimes very amateurish movies a huge production value, and I love them.
Nice.
Well, I was struggling to come up with something, and then it just hit me. The obvious one is Camelot.
the model Camelot from Monty Python. Yeah, come on, the model. There's actually a lot of great castles to choose from Monty Python, like Swamp Castle, Castle Anthrax, right? You know, those
are which are actually all the same castle.
Excellent. Yeah.
they just shot it from different angles. It's the only castle they could get.
I fought in your general direction.
I'm going to go with Bav Morda's castle from Willow, of course. You know, this impregnable, diabolical castle that can actually be sieged when you dig giant holes in the earth overnight that the guards don't notice. You know? And that, I guess it's not as impregnable. And a runner-up would be Castle Grayskull from Masters of the Universe.
Of course.
Yeah, which is a lot cooler in the cartoon than the live-action feature.
What?
Live-action feature just looks like Darth Vader's rehab, or the Emperor's Throne Room kind of rehab TLC program. So
it's pretty cheap.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. But okay, Daryl.
I am going to go with this is just basically straight off the top of my head because I couldn't think of anything before. But we're going with man mixed with beast.
Oh, man. All right, I'm going to go with, the Beast from Beast in Space.
Or the Beast. Or
I missed that one.
Beast.
No, I missed that one.
No, you should check it out.
No, I do not want to.
There's a 3-disc set. Why wouldn't you want
that? What?
I don't want to do that.
What?
Yeah, it came out about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. It's got the original version, an uncut version, and then I think a European extra cut that runs a bunch of extra hardcore footage in it. It's a sight to behold.
Oh,
it is
man.
One of the, I mean, the Beast in Space is pretty special, but, the Beast is one and two. I don't know which I can say is the superior, spectacle.
Is superior the word you're looking for?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Definitively yes.
Oh, man.
For what that is, yes. There are few exploitation movies that go so overboard as those two. Valerian Borkovic, I think, is the guy's name that made those movies.
That sounds right. He's the one who can't. I mean, all you have to know about The Beast in Space is that Uranus milk plays a strong role in that.
So it sure does.
Oh.
Oh, God, yeah. No, The Beast in Space is pretty much – I should have thought of that. I had a different thing in mind. But, no, The Beast is probably definitive, I think, there.
Nice. Well, I won this one.
You won.
Or is trying to top that.
Well, given my insane schedule, I've been doing DVD verdict work late into the night pretty much every night. So I've had Netflix and Amazon Prime running in the background. And I had Conan the Destroyer on the other night. And he takes on that wizard in that castle, and was guarding the diamond that they needed to whatever. Anyways, he transforms himself into this – he's in this hall of mirrors, and he kind of transforms himself into this half-beast, half-man thing. And the only way Conan can kill him is by shattering all the mirrors in the room. So you watch him discover this and try and slice this beast in half. And, of course, it's a guy in a terrible rubber suit. That's my answer.
Very good.
Well, at times, Grace Jones in that movie looks like a man in a terrible suit, too. So.
Right, I'm gonna channel Mac here, and I'm going to go to Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and I'm going with the Ugnaughts from Cloud City, the bit of midget pig people.
Do you think they were like the lowest class in that whole class system? Probably, right?
Yeah, they were short and pig people.
Yeah. Then yes.
Nice. The correct answer is yes.
But damn, could they smell with carbonite?
Yes. All right. So I'm going to go with a cartoon from my childhood, maybe a little earlier, but one that was on syndication when I was a kid. I'm going with Ookla the Mock from Thundar the Barbarian.
There you go. Ookla.
The toughest lion-maned monkey man ever on a cartoon.
Who spoke no English.
But they could understand him, so it didn't matter.
Yep, they could, just like Chewbacca.
Yeah, no, it's, super science and sorcery, I think, answers all the questions. Yes.
I still have my Ookla t-shirt, so, yeah.
Yeah, he was, that is far and away my favorite cartoon from childhood.
Oh, absolutely. Pretty much was, Ruby and Ken Spears, who helped create Scooby-Doo. So
yeah, and I was actually watching it or watching some of that again recently, and was surprised that it holds up.
It does. I reviewed it for the
site.
As
it does.
Yeah.
It's dark and strange, and a lot of fun.
I'm surprised they haven't done a live action adaptation of it yet.
I'm so glad they. It would just look like He-Man.
Yeah,
and nobody wants that. Nobody wants a new He-Man.
Dave, you want to weigh
Stop.
In on that?
No, I'm not. I'm going to bump it over to you, Eric, to take to Michael, take us home, because that doesn't even deserve a comment.
All right, so we're going to, in honor, well, I won't even give mine away, but let's just say bloodiest action climaxes.
I'm going to go with Dead Alive.
That's right.
The Peter Jackson zombie movie that ends with a guy with a lawnmower kind of strapped to his chest, just mowing down a house full of zombies.
Never saw it.
So much blood.
Yeah.
Never saw it, huh?
Nope, never saw it.
Did you ever see any of Peter Jackson's early pieces?
I saw The Frighteners, right, with Michael J. Fox?
Even earlier.
Yeah, before
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I think it was
I saw Heavenly Creatures?
Even earlier.
Before
I would say
that,
Heavenly
yeah.
Creatures was the first was his first mainstream movie. If you go with
the trifecta that you want is Bad Taste, Dead Alive, mm-hmm. and Meet the Feebles.
Yeah, Meet the Feebles is especially interesting because it's really high concept and really freaking gross. it's amazing, and I've said this here before, and I've said it many times. It absolutely amazes me that Peter Jackson was able to do Lord of the Rings and everything that he's done because of that trifecta is so disgusting.
Although each of those movies has a really great Gollum scene.
Yes, they all do.
It's amazing that he was able to find a place for it.
But yeah, that's always fascinated me that people gave him so much money to make Lord of the Rings when his history had been
checkered,
very checkered.
He was young; he needed the money.
True.
those are also my three favorite Peter Jackson movies. So you know, there you go.
Okay, you.
Actually,
what were we talking about again?
Good.
Oh, bloodiest finales.
Bloodiest finales.
Man, should have these on standby, but
all right, I'm going to go with one of my favorite horror movies, the end scene of Hellraiser.
Oh, that's good. Yeah,
Frank is once again beset by the chains, gives his final meaty sounding line of Jesus wept, and then is torn absolutely apart.
Yeah.
By the chains.
Yep, that was rough.
That's for sure.
Awesome movie.
Okay, man.
You who have seen so many bloody films.
I can't. I'm choking in the spotlight here. I got nothing.
It's just a sea of red.
So this wasn't even something tough like Death by Harmonica or something like that.
Last of the best.
Let's see. Boy, I'm sure something will hit me in the middle of the night and I'll shoot my bed and think about it. But
anything from the Power Rangers?
Nothing from the Power Rangers. Okay. Keep throwing out names here. Help me out here.
Full House?
Willow.
Full House, no, nothing there. Willow, no.
What about the one where Geller gets torn apart?
Kimmy Gibbler?
Kimmy Gibbler. Sorry, yeah.
Kimmy,
no,
yeah.
You mean
Kimmy Gibbler.
Special guest Uri Geller. He came on Ben the Spoon.
Yeah. Or
that demonic forces.
Uncle Joey finally drops to his death on a rock.
Okay, this isn't bloody, super bloody, but it's one of my favorites, and the implication is pretty bloody. But the end of Universal Soldier, where Dolph Lundgren gets thrown on the combine. And
the very end of Universal Soldier.
Yep, and Van Damme flips the switch, and he just gets ground chuck, and just spewed that out. And one of my all-time favorite post-death lines, you know, girl comes up, where is he? Simply, Van Damme says, around. Very good, very good.
So let me ask a dumb question then, because Lundgren's been in every one of the Universal Soldier sequels, has he not?
He wasn't in the third. I don't think he was in the second or third one.
Okay. Because I know there's one coming up that he's in.
Right, he came back in the fourth and the current one that's currently. So.
All right, as a different character or as the original character?
I don't know about this current one, but it was the original one from in the last one, which was in the Universal Soldier Regeneration or something, which wasn't too bad, actually.
All right.
Yeah.
As it goes.
Yeah, as it goes. Did I answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, there you go.
Yes.
All right, well, I guess it's to you, Michael.
All right, well, the Squib budget on Django Unchained had to be three times that of craft service because anytime anybody got shot, there was blood spurting everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's classic Tarantino, and it's played to consistently great effect, but the final shootout at Leonardo DiCaprio's plantation has to be one of the bloodiest things I have ever seen on the big screen.
Hmm.
I mean, we're talking shotgun mayhem where blood is splattered all over everything. I mean, these guys get shot multiple times. They're using human shields. It's wild.
Sounds wild and woolly.
Yes.
Nice. Well, on that note, being Leonardo DiCaprio and plantation being used in the same sentence, well, that's a good way to end this. So, Matt, good luck with your computer. I'm sure we'll talk to you next week. Michael, thanks for pinch hitting. Hopefully you were able to consume some vegetable lasagna throughout all this tomfoolery. And Daryl and Eric, thank you again for pitching in. FridayFilibusterDVDVerdict.com is our email. And you know what, Mike, why don't you take us away with some witty vernacular?
Gone!